You're stealing that.
Okay. Let me open the House Committee on Agriculture and Natural Resources. This is February 26, 2019. And since we have one of our colleagues here, let's open a public hearing on House Bill 2919. Ask Representative Nierman, and then do you want to bring Mark with you to come up and join us? And tell us about House Bill 2919.
Thank you, Chair Clem, and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Mike Nierman, and I'm the state representative from House District 23. The biggest city in my district is Dallas, and it covers just south of Newburgh all the way to the Lane County line there. And what we're considering today is House Bill 2919. And I think this is just a small, common sense sliver of a land use exception to help out a charter school that can make use of that exception. I also understand, and I should probably have my ducks in a row a little bit better on this, is that this bill is going to be combined with a bill that's being worked on by Representative Wilde. That's a similar kind of thing. It's like just a similar land use exception that makes sense to combine into two bills. So I'm going to turn the rest of my time over to the people who are boots on the ground and know exactly what this bill is going to do and why it's needed.
Welcome.
Hi. I'm Mark Hazelton. I'm from Kings Valley, Oregon. And we can just start out with a little bit of history in that our school was people arrived in Kings Valley in like 1845, and they built a school in 1848 while in the midst of clearing the land and whatever they were doing. And they picked a pretty interesting place. And about mid-2000s, we put in a play structure, and we dug a whole bunch of holes. And that land is full of rocks. 3 to 5 pounders, I think, you know, round. So we know it's full of rocks. We know they're pretty smart. They put the school on the worst farmland in the area. It's still pretty good, probably, compared to most farmland. Anyway, the school's an anchor for our community. There's 40 employees and I think 204 students, roughly, today, preschool through grade 12. I first submitted this bill in around 2014 for the 2015 session. The school property, you know, at that time is covered with buildings and parking lots, you know, a small playground and a big field. And the big field is the septic field. So that's the open space. And at that time, we were working on expanding the pre-K or the kindergarten. All day kindergarten was coming on, and we had a preschool sharing half day. You know, it was half day in the morning was kindergarten, and the next half day was preschool. And we needed some space, and we were looking for space in different ways, maybe put another classroom on. And so I went over to the neighbor and talked to, you know, maybe we could put that septic field in your hay field, and he was amenable. But when I went to the county, you know, it turns out that the a septic field in the neighbor's agricultural field is restricted, and there's no exceptions the county people could make, you know, based on the law. We didn't meet the criteria. We didn't own the land by the date, and so there was no exception. And turns out a septic field would constitute a school expansion, so we didn't do that. And I think we put the preschool kids in the library or something. We may do in some way, you know. So you know, in this time now, what we know is available is less space, but we really know means doing that, and it takes. Let me go back. I got mixed up here. So education is changing. I think you know that there's things coming on for us. Additional P minutes, the all day K. You know, we need hands-on sciences and labs. We want a preschool still, the community technical education and the PE minutes. You know, all the stuff that we can know is in a phone, but to actually learn stuff, you need space. People need, you know, kids need to do stuff. And I think you'll find a lot of rural schools are constrained on space. They're trying to do all these different things, and we just need more space. So urge your support for this bill. of this concept.
Good afternoon. Thank you. My name is Beth Wainaki, and I live in Kings Valley, Oregon, a rural community located approximately 20 miles northwest of Corvallis in the foothills of the Coast Range, kind of at the southern end of Representative Nierman's district, south of Dallas there. I'm here today in support of House Bill 2919 and ask you to consider the positive impact this bill would have on our local agricultural community as well as our school community. So my family and I own and operate a small diversified market farm in Kings Valley, where we have been community members for almost 20 years. When we moved to the area from Corvallis in 1999, it was important to me to be in a community that self-identified as rural. Having grown up in just such a place, I highly value the land-based lifestyle and the unique characteristics among rural neighbors who depend on themselves and each other in so many ways. It was important to me also to raise children in such a community, and I'm grateful that our children, now 13 and 16, have also been raised in our rural school since they were each 3 years old and from which they both expect to graduate. For our family, having a local school has meant my kids have more time at home, at work and play, rather than riding on a school bus. I have opportunities to engage in volunteer activities that are convenient to my farm-based occupation. And I know my neighbors because many of them are school parents or work and volunteer at the school. The school also supports many other local farm families. Every month, growers in our agricultural community gather at rotating potluck in our homes. These growers represent the diversity of the best of Oregon agriculture. Timber, cow dairy, goat dairy, livestock production, berries, produce, tree fruit, and hazelnut, among others, all in our local community. Many of these farm families have kids in our rural school, and even more of them work or volunteer at the school. I see them when I drop off or pick up my kids or at one of our myriad of school productions. Many a so-called chance encounter at school has led to knowledge and resource sharing that helps support our family farms. On my own farm, I hire up to a dozen local teens each summer to pick blueberries. These kids come almost exclusively from the school or a school connection and have been paramount to my success as a farmer and to fulfill my mission of providing employment opportunities to local youth. In addition, we have partnered with the school for field trips and pumpkin patch opportunities. I am fortunate to live in an educational community that highly values early childhood education, career and technical training for youth, and physical activity. For rural schools, especially pre-K through 12th grade schools, the ability to offer a diversity of programming to a diverse range of children is challenging with limited physical and facility space and resources. We need options which House Bill 2919 will provide. Oregon's land use laws are paramount to preserving farmland. However, we must also be mindful of preserving the rural communities that engage in agricultural production on that land. It is my experience that local schools support rural communities and my belief that strengthening those schools in rural areas will in turn strengthen those areas. House Bill 2919 does just that, and I urge you all to support it.
Yeah, and I've got a question now too myself. Vice Chair Post.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to ask the question of the folks from the school first and then Rep. Nierman. Maybe I missed it. Kings Valley, is that charter school? Okay, so it's charter school. That wasn't meant to be a statement or anything. That was just, I wanted to make sure I understood. Then Rep. Nierman, do you foresee other, have you heard of or aware of other situations like Kings Valley where you've got a rural school, farmland right nearby? You know, can you think of any, have you had other people approach you with other places this might take effect?
Thank you for the question, Representative Post, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee. I can't think of any, and I have to confess that I'm not all that familiar with Representative Wilde's bill, which I understand is similar to this, but I'm not even sure that it involves a very rural situation or anything like that. So other than that, I don't know of any other situations like this.
You do? I do. I know of one is the Alsea School District with Mark Thielman. The land surrounding him is either in floodland, and his only way to expand is onto farmland.
Okay. That was my question.
Okay, so this is really technical, so you can feel free to say, boy, I really don't know, and we'll figure somebody else who does. But I thought in my head that the thing that caused you your problem, 215213, the thing that caused you your problem was actually my bill back in 2009 that deleted the ability for, quote, public or private schools, including all buildings essential to the operations of a school, to be in an area zoned for EFU. But at the time, we actually added in a new provision to what can be on EFU, and it's called, sorry, I'm going to scroll to it. A public or private school for kindergarten through grade 12, including all buildings essential to the operation of a school, primarily for residents of the rural area in which the school is located. So we were, what we were going for was urban schools, like one of mine in Salem Kaiser, that decides they want to go buy farmland on EFU and then bus all the urban kids out to this piece of farmland just to get the property cheaper. We were trying to stop that and just make sure that rural schools can be on EFU. So I'm just curious, who is it is telling you you can't expand right now? And what are they citing as the reason?
So there's in the law, there's some date exclusions. So you have to have the adjacent land under ownership by, I think it's 2009. And so that's what keeps you from, kept us from doing, because we don't own the land that's adjacent, and we couldn't have, and we would have had to have purchased it before 2009. So this bill strikes that date out. Yours is under
adopted marginal values. But the reason the 2009 date was relevant was only if you were a use that used to be conforming and then you went to non-conforming. So, because if your school was already conforming prior and our bill made it non-conforming because you were an urban school on rural lands, which you're not, then you would need a bill to make you back into kind of conforming status for your things. But even before 2009, we still allow rural schools to be on EFU right now with no do we someone could go do one right now on one.
Yeah, so this was Benton County, and they said we were a non-conforming use.
I wonder if they're defining your school as a school that is not primarily for rural, for the rural community, doesn't primarily serve. Do you have a lot of people come in from other places?
About half.
Oh, that might be the problem.
Well, we're in a tricky area too, because our school essentially shares borders with three school districts. And so, you know, the kids, our in-district kids, are given priority for enrollment in the school. But, you know, we've got kids that live 2 miles down the road that are technically out of district who do come to the school. And so we draw from a geographic region that's not actually the conventional district line. Mm-hmm. And so that has muddied the waters for mm-hmm. us in a number of areas.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that is the problem then. They probably have deemed that you are just a public, because it's a public charter, I gather, right? I guess they put you in the category of public school and not public school primarily to serve a rural community. And so if you're a public school, that's true. You you're kind of grandfathered for your current buildings, but if you try to do more, you couldn't. Mm-hmm. And that's the part that needs to be fixed. And I have I'm not arguing against the bill at all. It's from a policy standpoint, we were trying to get big urban school districts to stop buying cheap farmland and then busing kids way out past the UGB to these giant schools that were built out in the middle of a farm field. And then people complain about pesticides getting on the kids. Like, well, you built the school right next to a bunch of farms. What do you want them to do? So we were trying to solve all that because rural schools typically know that if they're next to a farm, there is dust and sometimes spray, and people don't complain as much because they're moving out to a farm region and they kind of get that. So I'm just talking myself into a circle here. Who else has questions? Representative Helm.
Well, in looking at the bill, it's not just the date that seems to be changed, but it eliminates a conditional use approval route. My question is, why is a conditional use route not available to you, or for some other reason not desirable?
It's a delay in time, So if you're trying to expand, you have to go through quite a process to be at the county land use people It could be delays of 3 months to get permits and things like that. So it's mostly a time factor. For me, that's my opinion. There might be other reasons for that.
3 months. To follow up. Vice Chair McLean.
That's the line that bothered me. We're talking line 22, correct? Okay, so that is the line that, there's reasons for conditional use reviews, right? We're trying to make an equitable, accessible, fair, you know, process. And so there's a list of items that, you know, that we think needs an extra review, or at least it needs a review. And so my feeling was that changing that law would make this like a Pandora's box and would open the review process in such a way that it's not just about you, it's about who anybody else that might be on that list of reviewed items. And now with you taking that out, you know, for these uses, that it would cause more of a spreading effect for other things other than anything you've described to us today. So I, you know, the legal lawyers and others need to tell me if I'm wrong, but to me it was it's a situation where this is not a one-off even. It's basically precedent setting. And so I'm just curious about anybody else's review of that.
You know what I'm thinking? I'm guessing here that public schools used to be an outright use. And then in House Bill 3099 in 2009, which was my bill again, sorry about that, but I was at a point, I just wasn't trying to catch up an existing school. Because it was an outright use, and their school was built under an outright use, they don't want to suddenly be made to be a conditional use when they never would have been otherwise. Hmm. Which means this might be written poorly. We could actually probably have LC accomplish the exact same thing, not have that line in there and set a precedent, just by modifying the outright use part that is about primary rural school, primarily for a rural school. We could probably tweak that language to say, or even the part that is about urban schools, you could add, LC could add something that says, unless it's adding on, I don't know how many square feet you're thinking about adding on, but unless it's adding on to an existing school that was made a non-conforming use by the 3099 or by the 2009 act.
Well, I mean, there's two things. There's the size of the urban use in a rural area. I mean, evidently there's no sideboards on that old bill of yours. I mean, the only thing you have that I've heard about is that they're supposed to not be basically bringing urban students to a rural setting. So, I mean, you've got that sideboard.
Yeah, we went from schools were an outright allowed use of any size, any shape, anything that they wanted to do. Then we went to, we're going to go down to only schools are still outright uses if they serve the rural community. And so we didn't write any new sideboards. We just went from all schools to only rural schools. Mm-hmm. And I'm guessing, again, that you guys got caught up in what's the definition of a rural school. And I'm sure you feel like it's a rural school, but Benton County may not feel like it's a rural school because, or they may call it rural, but the part that says primarily for the use of the rural community it serves, you may not qualify for that because you've got a bunch of people coming in from nearby districts and something. It would be helpful for us to actually probably have a talk ourselves with the Benton County. Plus, sometimes these things happen, and I know if you've been at it long enough, you're not expecting this to happen, but sometimes we call the county and we say, hey, you know, we think you're reading this wrong, and we're about to change the law here to make you read it right, and then they decide to just go ahead and grant you your building permits rather than have us do it. Sometimes. Yeah, so I have a few more questions for you all, I think. Representative Bossart Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just wanted to go on record that regardless if the school was if bussed out or regardless, that we wouldn't be spraying kids.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah.
Mr. Chair, can I comment on a topic there? So I was approached by the Farm Bureau today who got this bill on their radar, and they said that they wanted to have some sort of ag review, and I think it's just for that issue of not spraying kids, but spraying near kids, whatever. Those kinds of issues that come up where you have a kind of an ag use and a non-ag use contiguous with each other. So that's something that's something that's already been highlighted on this bill.
And they're going to testify here in a minute, too, so that maybe they'll bring that up. I will tell you, my freshman year, one of my neighbors from our orchard that I no longer own part of in Parkdale came here and talked about, oh, yeah, I remember how when my wife was on the school board, they were always worried that your spray was getting on the children. Mm-hmm. And I was like, and I went back and asked my wife, said, what are they talking about? And they said, those were irrigation sprinklers, and that was water. And the kids like to get the mist on a hot day. And I was like, yeah, it's thankful to come to the legislature and talk about spraying directly on children, because our orchard is a school built right next to our orchard, literally.
That's a brown spray.
Yeah, that was great. Anyway.
Yeah, similar. One of those schools, maybe that school.
Parkdale Elementary.
Yeah, and Westside as well, built right in nestled in orchards. And our farmers are incredibly careful to spray at 3 a.m. so that there is no overspray or drift or anything that gets anywhere near the students. So,
correct.
Again, just like, let's make sure that we're all aware that
we didn't
people
even
who spray are very
spray
conscientious.
Once the summer was over. At all. We stopped spraying at all during the school year because we were sensitive to that. But there was a bill that session to ban any spraying within a half mile of a school, period, even during the summer, even when nobody was at the school. So, anyway, okay, I killed that bill actually, now that I think about it. Okay.
Who would do the inviting of the
county? Yeah, so we're going to call the next person too, and we're going to check with the county and see if we understand, because I assume they've told you you can't build this additional square footage you want to build. Benton County. Or even just a septic field. And the reason they said is because you're a school on EFU and you're not allowed to expand. You can only do what you currently have and no more. Okay, so we're going to talk with them directly about that and talk about this definition of rural primarily used for and see why you don't fit into it. And if we find out that that is a problem still, then we will look at this issue of the conditional use permits. Because I don't want to set a precedent about it, but from my perspective at least, it was an outright use when you built it. And if you just want to expand some, I don't see why you would need a conditional use permit when you didn't before, but yeah.
The size of the septic system, and there's a lot of different things there, but keep up your search.
I just don't want to suddenly have new conditional uses that were never intended either. We don't want to give you exceptions from a conditional use permit, but when you built the school, you weren't subject to a conditional use permit. And so that's the dynamic. I don't want to start putting you into one when you otherwise wouldn't have one either, just because you got caught up in 3099. But let's see what the Farm Bureau also has to say about this ag review that they're talking about and see what that looks like.
Thank you.
And yeah, and I don't know what Wildy's bill is at all. I have no idea what that even is or where it is. So we'll find out about that too. Mary Ann Cooper, Oregon Farm Bureau Federation.
Good afternoon, Chair Clem, members of the committee. For the record, Mary Ann Cooper with the Oregon Farm Bureau. That was the exact piece we were going to talk about, as we were concerned about the removal of the what's traditionally the ORS 215-296 review for impacts on neighboring farm operations. It just seems like in a school expansion, there should be a look at if you need to go into adjacent farmland, if there's other places, and making sure that that review is done to make sure that it's going to be compatible with the neighbors. I will note for the record that as we've all said, drift is illegal. So it's perfectly safe to have farms next to schools, and it happens a lot all around the state. But it is important, you know, if you have somebody, for example, that needs to be combining or moving cattle or anything very close to a schoolyard, you just want to make sure that the appropriate controls are in place. For example, you might want a more secure fence if you have a pen of bulls right next door to a school than if you don't. And so I think it's just really important that review stays in place and the opportunity to look at farm impacts and make sure that they're addressed in any expansion. I had thought just from a reading of the bill that the issue had been that 2009 ownership criteria, and I was like, yeah, we're fine getting rid of that as long as the standard is still there to look at farm impacts. And so that's where we were tailoring our testimony. I was unaware of the other provision that Chair Clem had brought up. So I think we are very willing to find a solution, but do want that review in place still.
Yeah, what I'm trying to figure out, I don't even know for sure if that's what Benton County's relying on. But the way you would become a non-conforming use, so then you'd have to get into this section of statute, is the legislature took away something that used to be conforming, and then it's because the date's January 1, 2009, I'm pretty sure it's because of that bill, because we were worried about people rushing to get them all in, so we went back to January 1 of 2009 for the effective date. And so I'm fairly certain the reason they're now need a non-conforming carve-out is because of 3099. But we were definitely not trying to stop existing ones from being able to expand somewhat. We were just trying to not have new ones built on farmland. You know, urban ones. We didn't want urban school districts buying cheap land and then causing, I won't say it again, but issues related to schools near farms.
No, Jared Clem.
Except for farm to school, because then you just walk it next door.
I know,
it's great.
Right? You can just carry your milk next door. We wouldn't want that either. I think it is laudable to ensure that urban districts are not buying farmland and busing kids out a long distance. But I do think, as you said, for existing schools, it does make sense for them to be able to grow as needed, but should be done with mindfulness to the potential impacts on the farms next door, because there are a lot of, animals, combining other things that are not as safe for children that you want to make sure are well protected.
So besides a conditional use permit, which I'm not even sure. So this is an explicit statement that it does not require one. I'm not sure that it would require one necessarily, because that's not a building permit. That's a land use permit.
This is what I get for not bringing the bill up with me, but I do believe there's another provision in there that talks about a look at farm impacts or something that references 215 to 96. Thank you. Conditional approval of the county in the manner provided in 215 to 96, which is the farm impact review. That is the not forces in the italicized. I'm looking at 1B that's removed.
Okay, so we're not talking a conditional use permit. This is a different type of approval.
Chair Clem, I believe that it wouldn't be a full-blown conditional use permit, but I think it would still be called a conditional use permit, just looking at the 215-96 standard of with your forcing a significant change or significantly increasing the cost of a neighboring farm operation. And I hate speaking in front of the land use attorney on the commission.
Just be curious at home. So any number of things can be considered under a conditional use permit, and when you and for certain rural residential lands and EFU lands, you might have this requirement under 296. And Ms. Cooper is exactly right. It's meant to protect farm uses because of the adjacency issue. And just anecdotally, the notion that a conditional use permit is burdensome or takes too much time, I think is not correct. I've processed dozens and dozens of these as a hearings officer. When you're in the county has 150 days from the time the application is deemed complete to finish up, total, including any local appeals that you need. So it's a very quick timeline, and the review is just not super burdensome.
Could somebody then challenge it to LUBA, though, and have that under review for longer than that?
Yeah.
That's probably what people were. I don't know if you have neighbors who don't really want you to expand, but that may be in this case what they're nervous about.
That's not a good reason for us to fix this by statute.
No, I know. But it was an outright use. That's the problem. It used to be an outright use. It certainly didn't have to prior to the anyway, we can talk with Benton County and see what it is.
I think it's worth looking to see yeah. that, going back to the outright use.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I'm going to be quiet, but I have I thoughts,
opinions,
too.
I bet you do. Okay. Let's hear them.
I agree with you on trying not to complicate, the system when it was pre-existing.
Yeah.
That's fine.
Yeah.
But the whole idea of a review process or conditional use is because there are circumstances that sometimes cause an idea or a, an approval that looks simple not to be simple.
Correct.
And there also is absolutely no reason to change a process where neighbors and others do have some rights of review, sure, because it's their neighborhood too. So I don't want to take away public review.
Yeah, and I want to be clear. I don't think conditional use permits are that burdensome either. Now, the exceptions process, when people say it's really easy, I don't think it's as easy as everyone says it is. But conditional use, I do think it is.
I think it's.
I just am trying to figure out whether I think it's a good idea to start applying conditional use permit process to things that were outright uses, and by bill by bill, we start having them either subject or not. So why don't we talk with Benton County, see if they would even put it under a conditional use, because all this is a preemption of them using a conditional approval. They may not even actually say it needs to be one. This is just us prophylactically saying it does not require one, but that doesn't mean they would require one. Mm-hmm. So we could ask Benton County, what are you worried about and what would be the process if they want to apply? And then we can find out what it would look like, and then we could probably talk more about this part if that sounds reasonable. I think we all want to get there. We're just trying to figure out how to not set precedent in other areas of land use law, because it's very precedent setting. Anytime there's a list and you take something off the list, if you weren't on the list, now that's off the list. And so you have to always be very, very careful how you're doing things. Otherwise, some other community will say, oops, you just, you know, cut us out on accident by doing this. Okay, and you two were Mark and Beth, right? Okay, so that's all I have on this bill. Is there anybody else here on this one? Okay, this is why no one wants to be on the Land Use Committee. And I'm gonna close the public hearing on House Bill 2919, and we will talk with Benton County, and we will get back with Representative Nairn and Laura should get your contact information. We don't have it, so we can let you know about our little talk with Benton County. And I'm gonna open a public hearing on House Bill 2844. And Representative Brock Smith, do you wanna tell us about this 2,500 square feet?
Yeah, and can we bring
somebody?
Yep. Mary Ann back up as well?
And Dave. Mary Ann and Dave, why don't you come back? Or why don't you join us at the
and I'll just stay here.
They call that
okay with you.
Area.
Is this the dais?
This is the dais. That's the witness table. Yeah.
The second time today that debate has come up in a committee.
Really?
Well, I think House that you need was also, is this the dais? Not the dais?
Oh. Yeah, I don't know.
It's very confusing.
Call that.
That's right, yeah, witness table. Or just call it the witness table. Witness stand.
Chair, there's also a couple of amendments for this.
And since it's a witness stand, we're going to put you under oath for this. Oh, just kidding. Okay. Whoever would like to go, Representative Brockman, do you want to tell us about it first, or do you just want them to talk?
No, go ahead.
Okay.
Live television.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Dave Honeycutt, Oregon Property Owners Association here in support of House Bill 2844. This issue came before you. We were talking about this in the short session, last session, as part of House Bill 4078 that ended up having the Bradwood Landing stuff, the guest ranch stuff, taking out
relating to use of land,
yes,
relating to land use.
Yes, yes, and we were talking about this issue and decided that it wasn't ready for prime time. The issue here relates to small scale processing. The legislature in 19, it was either 97 or 99, expanded the uses allowed, the non-farm uses allowed in EFU zones and to include processing facilities. With a number of different sideboards, I would argue that processing is a farm use, but it goes outside of the definition of farm use, and so we had to add it to 215, 213, and 215, 283. And essentially, it was processing facilities that did not exceed 10,000 square feet in area. And so it's a sub one use under 215, 213, and 215, 283, which means that it's a use that typically doesn't have county review authority. But in order to get that bill passed in, I believe it was 99, there was language included in the definition of processing that allowed the county to impose siting standards on a processing facility. Siting standards are things that you would typically associate with a more urban use, things like parking requirements and landscaping requirements and bicycle parking and things of that nature. They really typically don't have anything to do with a traditional type of farm use, including processing. And unfortunately, Both Ms. Cooper and I have members who have run into a problem with counties imposing some really some siting criteria that really don't belong in EFU zones to these processing type facilities. So what we've done with this bill is we create the bill actually creates a micro processing or a small scale processing facility, something that's less than 2,500 square feet or less. You can have a processing facility under current law that's 10,000 square feet or less. This would apply to a small subset of those processing facilities. And say if you're having a micro processing facility, then you don't need to go through the siting criteria that the county would normally apply for one of the larger processing facilities. The language, the amendments that Representative Brock Smith was talking about, and thank him for giving us the notes for these. One of the things that the reason that this bill wasn't ready for prime time in the short session last time was because of the debate to whether or not to include marijuana as one of these types of processing, small-scale processing facilities that you would include in this bill. The way the base bill, the way we've got it drafted and the lines are, the line is on page one, line 24, under the base bill, you can do one of these small scale processing facilities without county review or without county siting standards if it doesn't involve the processing of cannabis. The problem is we shouldn't have used the word cannabis because cannabis includes both hemp and marijuana. And so one of the small scale processors that would like to take that would like to use this bill if it were to pass is over in Deschutes County and processes hemp into CBD oil. And so with the base bill, it wouldn't apply in that situation. And hemp is as you all know, is a rapidly expanding crop, not just in Oregon, but across the United States. And so the dash one amendment takes out that line, page one, line 24, which would then allow both marijuana and hemp to be processed along with every other possible crop. The dash two amendments delete the word cannabis on page one of line line 24 and insert the word marijuana. So the dash one amendments apply to both hemp and marijuana. The dash two amendments would apply to hemp but not marijuana. So I personally would prefer the dash one so that marijuana has been declared a farm use. And I would be supportive of allowing that and treating it like any other farm use. But I also understand that I might be in the minority and who knows where everyone on the committee is. So we have both sets of amendments. If you intend to move this bill, I trust you'll have that debate.
Can you,
Mr. Chair?
Representative Howell. We've never talked about this topic before on the floor.
Dave, can you say that again? My memory is that from the very beginning, we identified marijuana as a crop, specifically so that it could be grown and produced on farmland.
Mr. Chair, Representative Helm, that's correct. In 2015, the legislature declared marijuana production as a farm use in the exact same fashion as carrot production or onion production or whatever. And so I could tell from some of the looks up there, and believe me, my board struggled with this after the marijuana measure passed. My phone rang off the hook, and about half the calls I got were, hey, I want to grow marijuana. How do I do it? And at that point, my answer was, I don't know. And the other half were, hey, my neighbor wants to grow marijuana. How do I stop him? And my answer to that was, I don't know. Well, the 15 legislature laid out the pathway, and OLCC has come in with rules to carry to implement that. So we know the answer to that. But one of the things the 15 legislature did was say that marijuana is a farm use. And so my board decided that if it's a farm use, it ought to be treated like every other farm use.
Can I ask a question?
Vice Chair McLean.
I just wondered what were some of these examples of these siting regulations that counties had?
Chair Clem, Vice Chair McLean, they can be a number of things, but the ones, just the ones off the top of my head in Deschutes County, there were landscaping criteria, there were parking criteria, you had to have a certain number of parking spaces, you had to have ADA disabled parking, you had to have bicycle parking, all of those things that you would associate with some type of commercial use, but you wouldn't associate with a processing use where the farmer is just processing crops and not, it's not a public use of the building.
Can I ask one more?
Follow up.
So on my mom and dad's farm, when I was growing up, we had a poultry killing plant. That's what they called them at the time. But it was a facility on the farm that had to be regulated for health things, of course. So it doesn't deal with anything that has health related issues. I mean, I know the egg production, you know, and they're candling them and they're putting them in, you know, into their containers and all of that. I mean, we're not talking about anything like that because that's not really county. But these things are just little things that the county might think are amenities or keep the parking off the road or that type of thing.
Chair Clem, Representative McLean, that's correct.
Chair, we have another
Vice Chair or Representative Helm.
As we look at this question, it strikes me that we may be well served to invite a couple of folks to describe. There's already some processing that goes on, mm-hmm. and what it actually is and what it looks like. Because I wouldn't want us to have our imaginations go wild on this. I've been to a couple of these. Processing on-farm processing facilities. They occur in small, well-secured, well-lit rooms, and you would never know that it was going on. In fact, they don't want anybody to know what's going on for security reasons. So the impacts that we guard against when doing on-farm processing, it does not seem to me that processing of marijuana would be of a concern from a nuisance point of view, sound, odors. Hop farms and their processing on farm is far more impact on the surrounding properties than what I've seen.
So, Vice Chair Post.
Well, Mr. Chair, and maybe this is a question, I don't know if this is a question for Laura or whom. Okay, so this is a simpleton question. Neither the dash one nor the dash two, nor the original, why does B, what is that? So section two, B.
Big B.
Why does that even need to be there? Am I missing something? In other words, the dash one makes it, instead of being there, this, and the dash two, instead of being there, makes it this. Why does it need to be there at all? Am I just missing something? In other words, if you want to have cannabis, have the cannabis, but if you don't have
Chair Clem,
why does it need to be mentioned?
Yeah. Vice Chair Post, for the record, Mary Ann Cooper, and I do have additional testimony to provide later, but and I think Representative Helm stated this earlier, for us, the dash ones would be kind of the clean version of the bill, which I will also note has been dropped as 3086 as a clean version, I think, in the bill stack today. So we'll probably be coming to this committee. That's this exact same bill with the marijuana language removed. The effect of not having any of the language around cannabis it would include cannabis, marijuana, and hemp because it's a farm crop and because this allows on-farm processing. And I will also say for the record, for Farm Bureau, we've engaged in this discussion around the fact that, you know, marijuana is a farm crop, and we've been concerned in some of the counties as counties are trying to distinguish it. We're like, hey, those are arguments you could use for any crop, and why would we treat it differently because of the smell or because of the noise or because of any of those reasons? Because that is true of any kind of farm crop or farm use that you're making of your property. There's going to be noise, there's going to be smells, there's going to be lighting issues, and so not addressing cannabis expressly has the effect of including it. And we just want to be transparent about that fact. So we would be fine not addressing it expressly. That would probably be our preference. And to the extent that you're talking about the rest of the bill, I will also note Legislative Council, without our request, rewrote the entire existing section of law. So most of this is not new language. So processing farm crops, slaughter processing, most of that stuff that is included, actually all of that stuff that's included, is presently allowed up to 10,000 square feet with this siting standards review. They just, for whatever reason, like totally reorganized the statute and like changed where things are located. So it's all nice. Bolded. The only new thing is that you, notwithstanding any applicable siting standard, uses less than 2,500 square feet for its processing area. That's the only actual thing we are trying to do. Is to say siting standards don't apply if you are less than 2,500 square feet. We tried to convince them not to rewrite it because we thought it would be confusing, which it is, but they were disinclined to follow our suggestion. I don't know if either of those answer the question, but.
Okay, no, I think, I was reading the dash two and thinking I was reading the dash one as well. I was reading the dash two twice, sorry.
Gotcha.
The dash one says, delete lines 22 and 24 and insert.
Yeah.
So it takes out the mention of cannabis. Because it seems to me that makes, okay. Look, I'm not crazy about this area either, but I also do not want to discriminate against somebody for this, because that boat has left the dock a long time ago, right? I mean, I am on record as voting no on every single bill that had anything to do with marijuana in this body since I've been here in 2015. But the boat has left the dock.
Okay. Okay.
I do have some testimony in the meantime.
Well, okay, let's talk about it. It is not the same thing. It is illegal under federal law. That's why we discriminate. I'll read my quote from the floor. I voted for the bill. Rep. Brian Klim, D. Salem, was the only one who expressed any concern, saying he didn't like the characterization that marijuana was just another farm product that should be treated the same as food crops. Quote, it is an illegal drug under federal law, he noted, adding he would try to keep it away from my 7-year-old. Well, now I'm trying to keep it away from my 11-year-old, and it's an illegal drug. It is not just another farm crop. So anyway, I have strong feelings. The dash twos are fine with me. Everything else I'm not so sure about, but we'll just keep talking and talking offline and discuss it, and I'm sure we will get something for at least hemp out of this building. But unfortunately for you all, I happen to be the chair, and otherwise you could probably have this through already, but I am pretty uptight about treating still marijuana and hemp the same way. And I am fine with hemp, and marijuana is approved by our state voters and legal and currently illegal under federal law. And I don't really want our whole regime examined because we keep treating it like it's not illegal when it is clearly still illegal. That's my little spiel. And I'm up old fashioned and uptight. I get it. Okay. And if you grumpy old kids wouldn't have foiled me, what's the Scooby-Doo line?
You still voted yes on
Medley.
I did vote for it, and so did you, actually, by the way. Yes, you did. It says, in the end, though, Klim voted for the bill. The only no votes were Barton, Evans, Hayden, and Julie Parrish. 56-4.
Whoa. I was sick that day.
That could be. You could have been absent, actually. This is just some Google article. Marianne, you would like to testify generally.
I have a few more things down the bill. I thought the rewrite piece was
important. And then the Onion people want their bill to go to the floor.
So, Chair Klum, members of the committee, Marianne Cooper again. I would also know, I think, just some additional benefits and reasons we're engaged in this bill. We understood that the discussion would probably revolve around hemp and cannabis as kind of the newest decision of where we land on them. But we are aware of several farmers that are basically unaware that there is a requirement for a siting standards review. and are doing things like mint stills, you know, lavender processing, mm-hmm. any sort of kind of small on-scale farm processing that have been doing it for years, and I think would be very surprised if you said, well, do you have your county siting standards for that? And so one of the other benefits for us is ensuring that the folks that have been doing kind of that small on-site stuff are allowed to do it without having to worry about going to get this county approval and through this county process. So we do think it'll benefit a myriad of crops that on-farm processing makes tremendous financial sense and allows people more direct access to markets that they may otherwise not be able to access because they couldn't bring that processing on-farm and realize the kind of vertical integration benefits of doing it on-farm. So we believe this will help a lot of farmers access new markets, bring some value added onto their operation, and it is designed to be tied back to the farm and work hand in hand with the farm. So we know we have some difficult conversations ahead, and I think, you know, we both expressed our preference for where the bill will go, but I think this is an important topic more broadly, and we hope it can move forward. Thank you.
I think it is also an important topic, and I think it can move forward. We'll just have to talk about those amendments. And okay, then. Anybody else here on this? All right. Seeing then, I will close the public hearing on House Bill 2844. So we can get some people out of here who have to leave. Let's open a work session on House Bill 2451. This was our getting rid of the onion inspection, not for safety. That one would still occur, but this is the aesthetics, et cetera.
Chair Clem, I move House Bill 2451 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Vice Chair McClain moves House Bill 2451 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Representative
Hill. I'm definitely in favor of on-farm, small-scale production of onion products.
Of onions, that's good. Any further discussion? Any objection? Seeing none, motion passes, and we'll have Rep. Finley carry the red tape cutting bill.
Yay!
And guest ranches. Let me open a public hearing, House Bill 2435. So, colleagues, you may or may not remember that some of you weren't here for this, so you couldn't remember it. Right. 2 years ago, we noted that we had, I think, inadvertently let the guest ranch statute expire without really conversation. And so I think in the short session, we put it back on the books. And there was, in particular, a guest ranch and Sisters who was trying to do something, and they were worried if we didn't do it, they would become a non-conforming use, and then they'd be back like the people from Kings Valley trying to talk about non-conforming use law. And so we put it back on the books, and we gave a 2-year sunset to have a discussion, and most of us forgot, myself included, to keep prodding that discussion along, so that discussion didn't really occur, actually. And at this point, here's where I'm at. We just keep renewing the sunset. It doesn't seem to be a problem. It seems to be fine. Guest ranches, they're not that many. They can't do very much. And so with one exception, what I'm recommending in this bill is that we just take off the sunset and we have that guest ranches can't exist forever. And then if we ever want to change it, we can change it. Having said that, Central Oregon Land, no. Is that what they call themselves anymore? Land Watch of Oregon.
Central Oregon Land Watch.
I've got some amendments that I'm amenable to from Land Watch. I think it's just called Land Watch.
Oregon Land.
Maybe it is still called Central Oregon Land Watch. Anyway, the group that Michael Savaggio represents through his company called Ridgelark Strategies has some suggestions along the lines of that the guest ranch. There's not very many approved guest ranches, but each guest ranch will report annually to the county on the income size of its continuing livestock to ensure that the guest ranch component is incidental and accessory to the livestock operation of the ranch. And then counties could add additional reporting requirements and they would be made to the public. And the whole point is that if the guest ranch stops having cattle, then it's not really a guest ranch anymore. It's just a guest house, and there's no cattle anymore. So I think that's a good suggestion. And then with that,
can I bring something up?
Yeah,
real quick.
And then I have one person to testify too, Vice Chair Post.
Thank you. So in 2018, the short session, the bill morphed into something else. If you remember right, do you have the number?
Oh, yeah, I just threw in a whole, or we all, I don't know if you wanted to.
4031.
A whole lot of other topics.
It went out of the House, everybody voted yes on it, it went over the Senate, something happened to it over there. All I remember is I vaguely remember coming back over here to the House side and the amended version by the Senate, 19 people voted no on it. And I remember that Rep. McClain made quite a speech, he was on the committee, I think, at the
Mike
time.
Mike McClain?
About, Mike McClain, yeah, about ADUs, that was the issue.
Oh, yeah.
ADUs was in that bill.
It was relating to land use, so it got loaded up with a whole variety of things.
Yes.
And, but the ADUs had its own bill. Bossard Davis, she remembers. No, you weren't here. She's looked it up and she's found on her computer something about it. Yeah.
I was just going to say the reason for that was there was a drafting error that had occurred. The authorized ADUs outside of the UGB as well as inside, which was not the intent of the legislator who drafted the bill. The Senate passed amendments that fixed the drafting error.
That's right. And I got in. I had to apologize later for being mean to Sean Cleave on his birthday. I think it was about that. That was the reason.
Yeah.
It was the fix. So we let the ADU bill, actually the ADU bill passed with the drafting error in it. And then Chandler and Mary Kyle came back and said, oops, that wasn't meant to be in there. And that was the fix.
Yeah. So this would not go to that.
No, this has nothing to do with that at all.
That's what I thought.
No, it was a Frankenclam and it had a bunch of random land use topics all in one big bill. I didn't name it that myself, by the way. Someone else called these bills Frankenclims because there's been three or four of them like that that relate to land use and they have 20 different topics all in one. And I think it might be Mr. Honeycutt who named it that, possibly. And so, oh, Mr. Honeycutt. Can you just for once refer to Oregonians in Action just one more time for old time's sake? And then after that, we won't do it again. That's weird.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Dave Honeycutt, Oregonians in Action, here in support of, I apologize, Mr. Chair, whatever this bill number of this
Guest Ranch
bill is.
Bill. It's called the Guest Ranch Bill, 2435.
As you said, Mr. Chair, the issue that the problem that we had was the Long Hollow Ranch out of between Sister on Holmes Road between Sisters and Redmond. Needed to go in for an expansion in 2007, late 2017, and they went to Deschutes County, and the county said, you better get your application in quickly because this guest ranches will be gone as of January 1, 2018. So we the committee was kind enough in the short session as part of House Bill 4078, which is either a Frankenclam or a blub, BLUB, big land use bill.
Oh yeah, big land use.
Whichever it was, we extended the sunset on guest ranches to 2020. We dealt with Bradwood Landing.
And the TDOs,
and we had something that Doug Riggs was doing for Madras and the airport something
the airport
like that.
Annexation, something or other.
The bill went over to the Senate side, and they fixed the rural ADU issue, and that's what generated the controversy when it came back.
Right.
And so that was last session, but the conversation we had about this time last year was, let's take a look at just removing the sunset. If you go back and look at DLCD's farm forest reports that they put out every other year, in 2014 and 15, there was one guest ranch approved in each one of those 2 years, so two total. And the most recent farm forest reports, 16 and 17, there have been none. So guest ranches aren't a frequent use of the property. Frequent land use application that the Eastern Oregon counties see, and it only applies in Eastern Oregon. So this is not a Western Oregon use. And so they don't apply, people don't apply for them very often. Long Hollow has been a fabulous, fantastically successful guest ranch. And it's a nice use that doesn't seem to bother anyone, and there aren't very many of them. So removing the sunset seems to me to make some sense.
It seems to me like part of the reason it may not be used is it's pretty limited. You can only have 10 units, I think, and they can't even eat there if they don't stay there. And so the whole theory behind, hey, let's take another look, is maybe there's something out there that people want to do broader. But I tried that once, and nobody showed up except Sylvie's, and Sylvie's has tried what they're doing, and it's still ongoing. But other than that, nobody else really showed up with anything. So I feel like if we just take the sunset off, leave the statute, even if it's not aggressive enough for some really entrepreneurial person, they can always come back and lobby the legislature to change the statutes to allow what they want to do at that point, rather than just keep sunsetting, moving the sunset every 4 years and nobody comes up with anything, and then we just keep moving it again every 4 years. Vice Chair McLean.
I think the amendment that you talked about is really important. I really do. Because there used to be one that was kind of outside of Yam Hill, and they had lots of horses and they had cows, but they had an ability to, I want to say, I don't remember the name of it. Anyway, they were there for a good 20 years. And it provided, you know, some recreation. It provided, you know, a place to stay. It provided some rural activities and tourism. Mm-hmm. But I do think it's important to make sure that it's not a dude ranch, that it's a guest ranch, but it's not necessarily a dude ranch. And to me, the difference is it's not a working farm, or it's not a working ranch, or they don't have all the accoutrements that it takes to actually be a farm or a ranch. So correct, I'll be interested very much in looking at the amendment. And I think it's important, if it's called a, you know, a ranch, then it's a ranch, not just something that has cowboy hats and you might be able to wear your boots and go outside early in the morning.
You mean like a B&B that's sort of masquerading as a ranch,
exactly,
rather than actually having some working.
Yeah, exactly.
I think we could require by statute that that guy from City Slickers, Curly, is at, or someone that looks like him, is it everyone we approve? Oh. Okay.
The only man to get one-handed push-ups when he won the Academy Award, Jack
Palance. Yeah, he did. Jack Palance. What is it? Parlance?
Jack Palance at the age of 88.
One-arm push-ups. Can you do a one-arm push-up, Mr.
Hanukkah?
Okay, we're still on the record, so I'm going
to
move to a request I've got, again, for a committee bill. And I think Mr. Hagedorn gave up waiting for us to see if you'll grant this committee bill. So this bill, it's called LC 3671. And this would establish a task force on land use and economic development. And it would require the task force to review laws and policies related to vacant employment land within urban growth boundaries. And would report back to the Legislative Assembly about the availability of industrial lands, basically, or employment lands inside the UGB. And so this would be a committee bill at the request of the National Association of Industrial and Office Properties. And again, no implications of support for such a bill, just to allow for its introduction is the motion, or the request from your chair. And I'm going to open a work session, so this is all legal, and we don't have to come back and do it on another day. Let me open a work session for the purposes of introducing legislative concepts.
Chair Klim, I move that the following legislative concept be introduced as a committee bill, LC 3671, dated February 5th, 2019.
Vice Chair McLean moves that LC 3671, dated February 5th, 2019, be introduced as a committee bill. Is there any discussion? Any objection? Okay, so introduced. That's probably our last committee bill. I don't know if there's even legally any more time for me to try and get any more out of you. This, thank you for allowing some committee bills in this session. Members, anything else for the good of the order? And with that, I will go kill time for 2 hours so my next committee starts, and adjourn the committee. Thank you. Joint Committee on Student Success.